Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
All right, welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm Adam Gordon, and today's episode is brought to you by Lucio Sports. Lucio Sports has a suite of apps that allow you to integrate technology into what you do with your program, in timeouts, in practice, game prep, everything. The product that I'm most excited that they have is their whiteboard app, which you can see on NBA huddles all the time. The days of drawing up crazy squiggly lines are over. They now have play animated diagrams that you can bust out an iPad, press play, and get through 3, 4, 5 replays in a 30-second timeout. They've collected all kinds of information on their ATO efficiency, and it's off the charts. Head to luciosports.com now to find out more information. And if you're a member of Rising Coaches, you receive a free license to Lucio's products. So if you want to tap into that resource, you can sign up and become a member at risingcoaches.com. Also, next week is our Rising Coaches Conference Eastern edition in Atlanta, coming to you live July 6th and the 7th at Georgia State in downtown Atlanta. Very excited about it. You can register up until the start of the event on July 6th. Head to risingcoaches.com for a full list of speakers. We'll have Nate Oates out there from Alabama, Mike Young from Virginia Tech, Rob Lanier from Georgia State. We've got a great crew of speakers. Can't wait. Our guest today was at our event in Phoenix, I guess last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, Phil Beckner. Phil, how are you, man? Good to see you.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I'm excited. Obviously, we just saw you in Phoenix, and your presentation was great. I know everybody who was there agrees, but excited for this conversation because I took down all kinds of notes, and I've got all kinds of questions to follow up with. So appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. You know, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time, but even a bigger fan of what you do with Rising Coaches. With obviously, you know, I spent 10 years at the Division I level, but the opportunities and resources you provide for guys, I believe in what you do. So I'm happy to be here.
No, I appreciate it, Phil. I told this story to introduce you in Phoenix, and I'm going to tell it again here. But when I was at Northern Colorado, I spent one season there, and I was the ops guy, and I didn't know anything about the Big Sky Conference. And I just wanted to make sure, like, I did my job. And so we were on a road trip at Weber State. And as the ops guy, I like to hustle in to the gym to make sure the lights are on and the balls are out. And you know how that stuff is. You usually go in there. It's like 9 o'clock at night. You get off the bus trip, and then, you know, you kind of just mess around. You get some light work in. You don't really get a whole lot done. I get into the gym, and the lights are on, and the balls are bouncing, and I see one player, one coach, probably 9 o'clock at night, going through a workout, and I didn't know who anybody was. Again, I didn't know anything about the league, and I just sat there and watched for about 2 minutes, and man, it was one of the most intentional workouts I've ever seen, and it didn't take me long to figure out like who you guys were. You were the coach, and the player was Damian Lillard, and I got a front row seat the next night where he gave us, I think, 32, 11, and 9 or something like that in an effortless performance. He made it look real easy. Man, unbelievable to see that up close and in person. And, yeah, just curious, man, looking back, I know it's been a while, but what do you remember about the Weber days, and specifically with your time with Dame?
Yeah, those were some of the best times of my coaching career, to be honest. We obviously, I still train Dame, you know, to this day, but we reminisce about the Weber State stuff more, you know, more than you would ever think. I think the two things stand out the most. One is that's where I really learned to be a coach, because I was the ops guy starting out, but you know how it was in the Big Sky. When you're the ops guy, you're also kind of the video guy and the GA and one of the managers and all that. And then the second thing was just having a guy like Damian Lillard, who you knew was going to be pretty good, but But to see kind of his growth and his, you know, pathway along the way, the obstacles and things he overcame and the strides he made, and you telling that story, you know, as you start telling it, I'm like, man, I'm wondering if that was one of the days we threw a ball at each other or kicked a chair, or, you know, because it seems like almost every story someone tells about watching a Weber State workout, he or I got a little too intense and crossed the line. But it's definitely one of the biggest highlights, you know, of my coaching career.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I remember it being like very cerebral. Like neither one of you guys were, your intensity level wasn't like off the charts. It was just like extreme focus on each individual rep that you guys did. And then after the rep, you know, you guys would walk back, you know, it wouldn't be like sprinting. It wasn't going like a million miles an hour. Now you guys had a game the next day, but it was going like very hard when you went and then walking back, maybe get a couple of teaching points and then go again. It was magical, man. I've only said that about a couple workouts that I've seen, but, and again, it was only like 2 minutes, but like you guys were getting some shit done.
Yeah. Well, all the credit goes to him. Whenever you get to work out with a really, really good player or train a really, really good player, you look like a really, really good coach. So I give all the credit to Dame. And, but again, even going back to that, the thing we took, you know, a ton of pride in at Weber State, we knew that we had to be a development program. And even our workouts, how you just said it was a little bit more cerebral, or sometimes we use the word methodical. I think that's the difference between just training and working out versus development. And if you're going to really develop a player, you got to have a plan, and you got to have some of those slower, you know, cerebral times like you're mentioning.
Yeah, and I want to get into all that stuff and break down what you do in workouts in a little bit. But first, I want to talk a little bit about your career path. Where are you, by the way? That's an awesome setup. Is that your office?
No, it's the boss's office. He's going to, the guy who owns the facility and runs it. But I had a plug in my laptop, so I apologize. The other plug in wasn't working.
No, it's sharp. I like it.
Yeah, pretty good place.
but yeah, anyways, I want to talk a little bit about your career path. You said you spent, I think, 10 years at the NCAA level. Weber State, I think a year at Nebraska, a few years at Boise State. And you mentioned it a little bit at the conference last week. And it's something that we talk about all the time on the podcast. But can you talk about, like, what life in college basketball was like, and like what it, you know, did it, what did it do to you as a person, just juggling all the different things and the pressure? And
that's something I'm really, you know, more open to sharing about now, since I've been out of college basketball for 3 years. I made a really, you know, tough decision to leave it. I was 35 years old and I was the associate head coach at Boise State. And I had a chance to get on with a few NBA teams. I thought that's what I was going to do, but really felt like God led me to start my own thing. And also I had a couple really good players that wouldn't let me work for some other teams, I guess, to say it in a roundabout way. But going back to it, your question, like the effect it takes on you, I think looking at how I had to get into college was really, really tough, get into college coaching, because I coached high school for 2 years in Arizona before that, and also worked with my mentor, Russ Pennell, at the Arizona Premier Basketball Academy. So that prepared me on like how to coach. I was a JV head coach and varsity assistant for 2 years, but there was just this absolute mental and physical grind to get into it. And I started as the ops guy. I think I shared this in Phoenix in person, but I was the ops guy at Weber State for 2 years. And Adam, that was an unpaid position. So I would literally work like 8:30 in the morning till 4:30, 5 p.m. at Weber State. Then I'd go work the night shift at Costco. Or I'd do, you know, like 8:30 to 5. And then I would referee the men's league games like 6, 7, 8, and 9 o'clock at night to make money to pay bills. So the grind of it to get into it was super, super hard. You know, by my third year, I made a little bit of money. I was obviously in debt. So, and here's where I'm going with that. You asked how much it affects you. Like once you get in and you sacrifice that much and you see the success levels that people have, you're almost afraid to ever give any of that up. So I was a guy that I wanted to be the best recruiter, the best coach, the best player development guy. And because of that, I sacrificed family, relationships, health all the time. And just moving throughout it, I was 7 years at Weber State, a year with the Oklahoma City Thunder, year at Nebraska, two at Boise State. And I would get so consumed with the day-to-day, never being able to shut it off, always worried about how we're going to win the next game, get the next recruit, get the next job, whatever it was. I ended up weighing 158 pounds when I left Boise State. Like, you talk about mental health, emotional health, physical health. Like, it was a battle for me because the job, and even this, and I know we kind of see eye to eye on this, but I let the profession eat me alive. And I'm humble enough and man enough to admit that, but like, I let the profession of college basketball eat me alive. And right now I weigh like 192. That you think about that, I was 6'3", 158 pounds. I remember going down the escalator at the Final Four, and some dudes are just like, Phil, you have lost what, like, I did, because it was just recruit, work, workout players, next guy, and it crushed me. So I think getting into it was so hard, and what you wanted, and you thought you had to have all this stuff to be successful. I got to the point where I was like, man, this stuff's not worth it. I'm either going to go coach in the NBA or I'm going to train my own clients, and obviously took that step.
Do you think that, you know, you mentioned like you were in that position at a pretty young age. Do you think that was like, you know, having success so young, or do you think that that led you to that? Or do you think it was that profession itself that is just really, kind of geared that way?
Really, really good question. Man, that's a great question. I would say being young and not knowing any better allowed it to continue. Because when you're single and young and you could do whatever and work 24/7, now all of a sudden you look and you're 33 years old and, you know, I was one of the younger assistants in the Big Ten. I'm like, I got to keep going. But, and I'm not knocking college basketball. I consult with teams right now. They hire me to bring me to campus and show them how to develop players and work with their coaching staff on leadership and whatnot. But the profession, in my opinion, the profession of college basketball, if you're not working for a tremendous leader, it's a sick profession. The profession will get you. And I was just out at Section 7 after we were at the Rising Coaches, and three coaches came up to me, literally from three different levels, low major, mid major, and a high major, and they're like, I'm thinking about getting out. How'd it work for you? How'd you do it? Man, I could relate to your story. So unless you're really, really working for the right people, like, or unless you have the right balance, the profession is going to get you. It's a sick deal. College basketball could be a sick deal at times.
Yeah, no question. And I was talking about this earlier today, but, you know, I feel like COVID hit and everybody was forced to take time off, and people were like, man, this is really beneficial to have some time to ourselves. And now college basketball came back and everyone's right back to like exactly what they were doing before. So, I mean, it's sick. That's the perfect word to describe it. It doesn't take, you know, you can be really good at it without putting in, you know, 20 hours a day and being on your phone and Twitter and verbal commits 24/7. But I get that question all the time. People always come up to me, hey, I'm thinking about getting out too. How did it go for you? Is there anything, like, what do you tell them? Do you miss anything about it? Do you ever see yourself becoming a coaching a team again?
The first thing I tell them is that, and I even have NBA guys hit me about this, guys think about, and I'm like, don't my path. I live in fantasy land. And it's like, because all these player development, we have so many good NBA guys and pre-draft guys who want to train with us or work with us, like Damian Lillard, Mikal Bridges, Tim Frazier, Steven Adams, like, who, it's like going to Disneyland every day, like just riding the best ride. Okay, I get to ride this ride and have fun. Now I ride the, like, we're living in fantasy land. But you brought up a great point when you said during COVID, you kind of had to slow down and get a taste of what it's like. I would say you don't know what you're leaving. Like, all these college guys don't know what they're leaving until they're truly immersed in it. And not immersed in college basketball, but immersed in the next step. And you're like, my day's over sometimes at 2:30 and I don't have to be on verbal commits and I don't have to coach and I don't have to work. Like, so, and I told you a little bit before, I just hired one Division I guy and I brought another one out to possibly hire. And we went to dinner last night for a friend's birthday in Phoenix. This dude left dinner and playing Uno four different times. Two times was because his players were locked out of their room. Like, I don't want to deal with that. So, like, and I know I kind of got off on a tangent here, but when people ask, should I get out of it? I'm like, if you don't want to deal with that crap, absolutely get out of it, because you get to pick who you want to work with. And, but then your other question, what do you miss? If you're in the right environment and you have the right mission or kind of vision for your life with what you want to do, like, I don't miss much except the fist fight. Like, when the ball's about to get tipped and you're watching the Trailblazers play the Nuggets and it's game five, like, you miss the fight a little bit. But one of the D1 guys I just hired, he said this, Adam, and I think it'll be great for all the listeners. He said his best friend coached in the Sweet 16, and they shouldn't have made it there. It was like one of those magical runs. And he was like, when they tipped the ball up and we were in the Sweet 16 and we're playing, he was like, it was such an awesome feeling. He goes, but the last 5 years of hell in my life, I don't think it's worth that ball tipping up once I got there. He's like, that was the biggest highlight. So it's just a balance deal, and it's what you value after a while to make those decisions. Like, man, what do you really want, and who do you really want to be? And when if you know those answers, if you're at a point in your career or life and you know those answers, you're gonna end up in the right spot.
What are games like for you now when you're watching your clients?
That's a good question. If it's in person, like if I go, it's fun. If it's at home, I still got too much coach in me. Like I only take on 3 or 4 main clients during the season. Out of season, I'll work with all of them, you know, 20, 25 guys. But sometimes, and that's where like I'm learning about myself. I'm too intense. I'm too upset. Here's a good example. We just ran Pro Day in Chicago for one of the top 5 sports agencies in the country. We had a terrible walkthrough the night before Pro Day with our third group. So imagine like group 1 goes, great walkthrough. Group 2 goes, great walkthrough. Group 3, I was driving home with Russ Pennell, my mentor, who's coached Division 1 for 30 years. We're driving back to the hotel in Chicago. I'm like, feels like we just lost a game. I go, this is why I quit coaching college. Because like I couldn't, that was just walkthrough, Adam, for a Pro Day. And right. I'm like, I can't function. So when I watch games at home on TV, I start getting into them too much. I got to leave the house and go for a walk sometimes. I'm a little like psycho, but in person now, it's all enjoyable. It's all fun.
Are you just watching your guys and their footwork and, you know, what they're doing, their decision making? Or are you still like breaking down how the defense is playing and different ways you can attack it? What's your mind doing?
Good question. For them, and that gets into a lot of what we do for our guys. And again, training versus development. Our main guys, I'm watching a lot of what they do individually, but it's also like concepts and strategy. So like, how are they defending Lillard? We'll do kind of, we'll send certain players, they get an edit every single game day from us with certain strategies or things to attack that team with. And it's really, really important to do that. Hey, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good.
This guy, he's like our mascot at the facility. He runs around. Aubrey, come say hi to Rising Coaches. Come on. Look, say hi.
Hey, Aubrey, what's up, man?
Wave. And then you got to go. Get out now. Go. This guy. Aubrey, go. Adam, I know we're live, but I apologize.
All good.
This is, but again, okay. So going back to coaching, how about this? And like, screws. If this happened in a coaching meeting, it's the end of the world. Life is bigger than basketball. To have this 10 or 11 year old come in and interrupt a call and walk across our court and steal airheads and yell at our NBA players, I live more for that than getting like the 3-star recruit now. Like, that's right. Just like life. And I'll say this too. And here's a great thing I would challenge you with. I've been challenged with. I challenge all the coaches on this. Like, are you living a sterile life through your profession? Like, so many of us have a sterile life. You drive the same way to work, sit in the same office, deal with the same stuff. It's all perfect. Your head coach went, like, you just become sterile after a while. It doesn't even matter. And like, that's highly unprofessional. I apologize. But, like, the kid's awesome. He loves it. He's yelling at me. He wants the ball. Like, his older brother plays in the NBA. Like, those are things we live for a little bit. So, sorry. Off the topic, but that I'd rather have that stuff than dealing with a recruit who doesn't want to sign with you and their jerk AAU coach.
Yeah, no doubt. One thing you mentioned in Phoenix is like extreme clarity and like how important clarity is to you and your process. Like, was that really talk to me about going from being a college coach where you got to do all the things you just said, you got to recruit, you got to coach, you got to do player development, you got to make sure your guys aren't locked out of their room, you got to make sure they're eating breakfast. Like, you get to clear all that off your plate and just focus on one task. How was that experience?
It's one of the best things I've learned, and I wish I would have learned it quicker. My mentor, Rod Olson, he started working with me privately on that. I hired him just to mentor me, to lead me while I was at Boise State. And we started to do these projects. I'm actually putting out a player development newsletter tomorrow, like free player development newsletter. And one of the sections that's going to be on there, we're trying to do something kind of really unique in the regards of player development. It's going to be like the coach's corner. It's me and Rod Olson goes by Coach O. And he will give me a topic, a subject. He'll call my ass out on something, or something I need to work on. And I'm going to share what we're working on in that coach's corner. Just be really authentic. And one of the first things we started with, and he does it with all the Navy SEAL commanders, the top executives for the Pittsburgh Pirates and Texas Rangers, just the phrase high clarity equals high performance. And I think developing players, developing yourself, the college rat race, my profession now, if you know where you are and where you want to go and what the most important things are in between, not how to get there, but just what the most important things are in between, you're going to have a chance to be an elite performer. Like if you hired me as your associate head coach for Rising Coaches, my job, if I could help you develop more clarity for where Rising Coaches is going as an organization, as a group that impacts people, if we could know where we are, where we want to get to, and what's important in between, so many of the world's problems are solved. And now, my last 3 years, I have the coolest job in the world, not just because of the players I work with, but because of the teams I get to be around. So I get to help lead the player development stuff for USA Junior National Team. I get to be around the Milwaukee Bucks coaches, the Portland Trailblazers coaches. 4 or 5 Division I schools each year hire me to consult with them. The staffs and the leaders that have the most clarity on who they are and where they want to get to, they just get better results. And here's the best way to look at it. Like, I think this is so true because you were an assistant. I was an assistant. We've coached for some guys who have a great defensive philosophy, right? Like, you've been around a couple dudes who have a great defensive philosophy. Then you've coached for a couple guys who, like, we're going to take away the 3 for 2 months. Well, that shit ain't working. Now we're going to be a pack line team. Maybe we just zone. Who ends up being the better defensive team? The one who knows what it is, what it looks like, what it feels like, what it smells like. Like, if you just know that, you're going to be better than the majority of the competition. So for me to develop high clarity in my personal life was number one. As a leader, number two, and then professionally to run my business and organization was number 3. And here's the biggest problem it solves, because you could tell I get going, a little crazy, high intense dude, confrontational dude. When you know what you really, really want, now the shit that doesn't matter stays out of the way. Like, you don't have to fight as many fights. You don't have to go through as many, just like some guys, I'll send them home or kick them out. I'm like, it doesn't line up with where we're going. Just so now I've avoided so many conflicts, confrontations, or headaches on the back end.
I love it. Okay, let's get into like your craft and the stuff that I'm sure everybody, you know, really wants to know, the actual skill development and how you operate and the things you focus on. First of all, like, it seems like you're a little bit different than most trainers that work with NBA players. Like, and you talked about this, you don't really cater to the guys. I'm sure you do some, but you kind of make them meet your standards. Like, how is that? What are those standards, and how are you kind of setting those expectations at the jump?
Yeah, we have 4 standards that are set that we believe in, and they're not necessarily just mine. Like, it's my rules and I'm a dictator or anything. They're 'cause everything we do, our vision. So, you know, people have mission, vision, values, strategy, what, like, our vision, what I tell my staff what I tell all of our players, if you looked in our gym and we don't know what to do, if I hire you tomorrow, Adam, and you don't know any of our drills, you don't know what terminology, our vision should look like this. We're impacting people and we're impacting performance. We impact people, we impact performance. We build people and we build careers. So if you come in our gym, Adam, impact people, impact their performance, or build that person and build their career. If you do that, we'll be all right. So what we wanted to do was develop standards in the world of player development, the world of training, that will help build those careers and impact their performance. And not just for us. If we get them for 30 days, we want to get the most out of them. But man, can they get that job with the San Antonio Spurs? Can they make the top level team in the ACB in Spain? So our four standards, our guys and our pre-draft guys are saying these in job interviews right now because they bought into them for 3 months. We're committed, we're professional, we're hardworking, and we're always on time. Those are our four standards. Be committed. And we define each of these. And this goes back to the high clarity thing. If we could define these four things, when these dudes go to the Indiana Pacers or the Phoenix Suns, they're committed, they're hardworking, they're on time, they're professional. So like, I'm going to elaborate a little bit. Committed means you are who you say you are and you do what you say you're going to do. If you say you're going to work out every day with us at 9 a.m., you better freaking do it. If you say you're going to be a tough player, but you back down when we start doing conditioning drills, that's not committed. You're committed to being who you are and what you say you're going to do every single time. Hardworking, it's really, really simple. We work with pace and purpose. Pace and purpose, and then we have one phrase, we don't coach effort. If you're a pro or a college kid and I have to beg you for effort, I'm just going to ask you to leave. That's our level of working hard. Pace and purpose, and that's what you kind of described with Dame. There was a different pace to our workout. There was purpose to what we were doing. Well, that's how we define working hard. And then again, we don't coach effort. If we have to coach that, go pay somebody else. We're not an effort coach. We're a development coach. And then on time and committed. Here's one standard we have for everybody, and it doesn't lower whether you're, you know, NBA All-Star Damian Lillard or a pre-draft guy. Being on time means you're in the gym warming up with a basketball 10 minutes before your workout. And we will have just a direct, brutally honest conversation. If guys don't want to do that, don't do it here. Don't do it. You have to be dribbling a ball. If your workout's at 10 a.m., you're not stretching, lacing your shoes at 9:50. You are dribbling a ball, shooting a ball, doing something 10 minutes before. So that's being on time. Then the last one, I got some heat about this on Twitter the other day because I actually put some on, is being professional. We don't allow do-rags. We don't have earrings. We don't wear hats. We don't have photo camera crew. Like we have one photo day. It's like school photo day a year. So everyone, it's actually this frame right here in his office. We take a picture of every guy. We frame it. We put it in the boss's office. That's all we do. But being professional, oh, here's a great story. Just happened today. We have a kid from Baylor, national champion. One of our rules on being professional is when you walk in the gym, you introduce yourself to everybody. That's being professional. You look them in the eye. You take out your earrings. So they're like, I could work out with earrings on. Well, you don't for the Spurs. You don't wear earrings for San Antonio. You don't do it in OKC. Like, we're going to be highly professional. So the kid from Baylor, he didn't introduce himself to someone today, Adam. Just dude sitting over there. He didn't know who it was. And I'm like, hey, just go ahead. Just leave. Don't come meet my guy. So he runs over, and he's a great kid. He introduces himself to a guy. He doesn't have a job right now. He's a 11-year assistant in the NBA. He's been in the front office, and I'm training his high school son today. Like, and he had no clue this dude was evaluating him or seeing him there. I'm like, go up and introduce yourself. So, highly committed, highly hardworking, highly professional, and we're always on time. And everyone gets coached to those because it prepares them for their next job to be successful in that next environment.
Well, and I love how like, by just setting those simple standards and holding them accountable to it, that's where you're working on their character, right? And their whole person. Like you mentioned it the other day, but you're not just like waiting around for a text from one of these players to say, hey, I'm ready. Let's go get some shots up in an hour. Like you make them schedule times. Like they have three options when they can work out, and that's it, right? Like they've got to meet you on some things, correct?
Absolutely. We, I got a great compliment from a guy. He, him and his buddies would come in our gym, NBA player, and he had like three or four dudes with them, and they'd come in our gym, and at first they'd like kind of sit around, hang out, wouldn't do much, and, you know, almost running late sometimes, and this, and I'm like, no, 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 guys, this is a place of work. Like, you wouldn't walk in, if you walked into a doctor's office, I'm like, oh, hey, when are you working on me? 10, 11, when, like, I don't want that doctor working. Like, this is a place of work. And I shit you not, by like the end of the summer, these guys would walk in and they're like not even working out. They're sitting straight just watching their boy work out. They're like, Phil, you know what we should call this place? I'm like, what? They're like, the office. Because like we come here to work. The office gets work done. But Adam, here's the secret. Like everyone thinks we have the secret sauce now. They all want our clinics. They all want our stuff. They want Dane. The secret is there are no secrets. There really isn't. But when you start off with accountability, vision, standards, and go through those with those guys, their results are going to increase automatically. Like they show up knowing they have to work a little bit sharper, a little bit harder. And that's why like, hey, we could go at 9 or we could go at noon, but we're not going just whenever you text me. And so here's one of our other standards. If your stuff is not set up 24 hours in advance, and we did this at Boise State too, you ain't working out. Go waste your day with someone else. Don't hit me and be like, can I get in today? We always talk about, I did this as an ops guy, being highly organized and overprepared. If our players could be highly organized and overprepared and have their stuff set up before, and there's been a study done, when I think it was like 78% of the time, if you set your schedule the day before, workout-wise, training-wise, strength and conditioning, recovery, there's a 78% greater chance that you will accomplish what you did than the other guy who didn't. So I'm not the smartest guy or most talented, but I'm like, I'm going to say if I'm lifting at 3 tomorrow, there's almost an 80% chance it gets done. If I'm just like, hey, I might work out tomorrow, probably not going to get done.
Okay, let's get to the actual workout. We're starting really simple. Like how long, give me out of season and in season, how long are your sessions?
Good question. I would say between 45 minutes and an hour and 15.
And no difference whether they're in season or out of season?
In season, what we do, we actually break our workouts down. I might have mentioned this in Phoenix into different types. We have a skill development workout. We have a conceptual workout. And then we have a development workout. Skill development is just everything. I mean, shooting, ball handling, cutting, change pace, change whatever it may be, concept, strategies, everything. Skill really is just like, man, we're just shooting and handles, or we're just one skill. Development is what we do a lot during the year to stay sharp. A term we started using, I actually stole this from Steve Nash when Lillard and I got to spend some time with him, but it's activating those feelings and those movements or those skills you really work to develop in the off season. So during the season, like with Lillard, we'll only go about 30 minutes. If a guy's not playing during the year, we might go 40, 45. But one of the major purposes we have during in-season workouts is activating those feelings, activating those movements so they stay sharp, so you could keep using them, so you could execute them through the last month and a half grind of the season.
And so what's the difference between conceptual, let's say, and some of the other? I understand you get the one shooting workout.
Yep, good question. So, and we kind of have that player development pyramid I showed you, which is in skills are just, you know, sharp movements, refined movements. So like, you know, dribble pull-ups, rips, pivots, and jabs. And we have 5 player development absolutes we believe should be incorporated in every workout with every player at every level. And the biggest takeaway coaches get when they come watch us in Phoenix or when they come to one of our clinics, they're always like, I can't believe how simple it is. And the reason why it's simple is because we know what we want. We know where we're getting. We don't do these 900 cone moves, crazy things. So Dame, I'm going to use him as an example. I was in Portland. Oh, it was right before Rising Coaches when I told you I flew out, literally flew from there. He gave the advice to Rising Coaches about holding players accountable more. We did skill workouts for 2 days. It was all base, balance, footwork, shooting. I tweeted a clip of it, of him pound punching the ball and freezing. And then a pound punch to get on one leg, then a pound punch and a shoot through. So that was a skill we were working on, and there was a progression to it. When you combine concepts, what I would say, that's where you get into strategies, decision-making, or putting multiple movements with multiple skills. So that was just one refined skill. Dame was starting in one spot, going to another spot. If I would have had him change pace, change direction, then come off a side pick and roll, and then it's either option A or option B. Now that's conceptual development to us.
Give me the five things that you get into every workout.
Five player development absolutes. One is ball handling, but it's weak hand development primarily. The posture, the details that go into it, but how we pound and dribble the ball with our posture. Pound and dribble the ball with your posture. So ball handling. And these go in a progression on how we kind of use them and how we develop them. The second one is footwork. That's rips, pivots, and jabs. How you rip the ball, how you pivot with the ball, how you jab with the ball. Rips, pivots, and jabs. And I think what's happened, like, you remember, you know, we're around the same age, but there used to be like Pete Newell big man camp. People used to teach footwork all the time. The last 7 to 9 years, Instagram made this big wave of trainers, and everyone does what? Ball handling cones. What did everyone quit doing? Footwork. So shooting percentages have gone down. Turnovers have gone up. They're not working footwork. So we go ball handling one. Footwork is two. The Pete Newell rips, pivots, jabs, base balance. The third one, I think this is what's lacking. And I'm telling, like, really, really lacking in development is change pace, change direction. Can you get your body and ball to move together at a high level? So that's one thing we're studying. Devin Booker's awesome. Steve Nash is awesome. How their body and ball move together. And can we get our college, high school, whoever we're working with, can we get those players to do that? So third absolute is change pace, change direction. And I talked about this in Phoenix, but can you go fast to stop? So many players just can't stop. They fall over. They lose their balance. Can you go fast to medium to stop? So that's our third absolute. Our fourth one, we want to get all those in order. So now we're doing finishing at the rim. We have four primary finishes. The reach out, Steve Nash, just regular. You only use one hand. The Lillard inside hand finish to protect the ball. You know, use the rim to protect yourself. The 2 foot power touch shot finish. That's kind of your Dwayne Wade, DeMar DeRozan, Devin Booker, that little touch shot. And then the last one is a reverse layup, using, you know, going under the baseline, under the rim to be able to score it. So ball handling, footwork, rips, pivots, jabs, change pace, change direction, finishing, being able to master those four finishes. And then the fifth one is shooting the ball. And that's just, you know, obviously I tweet it all the time. We might do a video workshop on it soon. People keep asking, but we just say shooting is the separator. When you study players in the draft, players at the college level, especially dynamic guards, the ones who could shoot it off the bounce or who could catch and shoot it when they're open, especially when they're a point guard or a combo guard, that absolute of shooting the ball off the catch, off of movements, and off of dribbles, that's the most important thing. And that's where, to be honest, that's why my business has flourished, because we can make guys way, way better shooters in those three areas. Being able to catch and shoot, being able to move, slide, lift, whatever those player movements are, and then being able to shoot it off the dribble.
Okay, so every workout you do, you're hitting those five things. Talk to me about ball handling. Like, that seems like such a basic thing to be working on with pros. But like, what type of stuff are you doing? Are you doing, do you like two ball drills? Are you doing are you dribbling through cones? Are you just
the first thing we do with every pro? But by the way, you're like, I should be charging you. These are my workshops and clinics. And I mean, like, you're asking the best questions that ever. You're just getting all, this is our stuff that like people are paying us for, Adam, and you're getting it all. But here's the number one thing. Like, we talk about the secret is there are no secrets. What makes us different is whatever ball handling drill we do two ball stuff. We do one ball stuff. We do a lot of full court change pace, change direction stuff. But with every pro and especially every pre-draft guy, it's what we do within the ball handling. And here's what you have to fix and address with every guy. Number one is their posture. Number two is the height of their handle. And number three is the force of their handle. I'm telling you, like the posture, and I showed some clips, I think, at Rising, but if we could get their posture right, if we could get the ball, so many guys dribble way, way, way too low. That's why they lose the ball, turn it over. That's why they lose their posture. That's why they can't create well off the bounce. So we get their posture really strong in a good athletic stance. We get their handle higher to where you want it. And then it's how hard and forceful you dribble the ball. And we have the simple drills we do every day that guys just literally get a ball and they walk sideline to sideline or half court to half court. And they just do, we call it the Lillard Pound Series because we started it at Weber State. It's actually on YouTube. Someone put it on a long time. It's like after his rookie year, him going through them, and it's about his posture, his height of his handle, and the force of his dribble. So we do all of them, but that's where I think our guys get better compared to a lot of other people not getting better because they just dribble the ball. It's too low. Their head's down. Their eyes are down. Just a bunch of activity with achievement. Our guys are literally making mistakes with the ball because of those three emphases.
Okay, and with the footwork stuff, are you doing the same moves regardless of who you're working out, or are you kind of customizing stuff based off their ability, their length, their position?
We're going to have to end this podcast because you guys aren't paying me for it and you get all we're going to actually release a video here soon called Hall of Fame Footwork. So you asked, does everyone do the same moves and same stuff with the footwork, or do you base it, you know, on position or player or whatever? Number one, every player with us does Hall of Fame footwork. And we called it Hall of Fame footwork because when you study all the Hall of Famers, they all have what? Great footwork. I worked with an NBA guy. He's an assistant on the staff with the Suns now. We worked together in OKC. And he said, great footwork gets you out of trouble. I mean, he played against the Olajuwons. He's coached against everybody now. Like, great footwork gets you out of trouble. So we're going to release a video at some point, our Hall of Fame footwork series. It's like five footwork drills with and without the basketball that every player has to master. Adam, I swear to God, Mikal Bridges, Dame, any of these guys I work with during the year, we warm up with Hall of Fame footwork. I bet you every other workout during the season, every single one. And people look at them, they're like, well, that's what junior high kids need. That's what college guys need. That's what these NBA guys need. Because, you know, if they have it, it activates those really, really sharp feelings and great footwork movements. So we have those, one, to answer your question. But then, two, we design moves and footwork and rips and pivots and jabs, not only based on position and player, but based on spots on the court, on how to create a shot. And I think that's where you get to really – the next level of development. So if you look at it, Hall of Fame footwork would be skill development. And then when we take it out to the perimeter and make it position or position on the court based, now we're getting into conceptual development. So you could get a shot or create a shot for a teammate.
Okay. Can you talk to me about fadeaways for a minute?
Yeah.
Like, it's something that, like, coaching in the college game, like, never – would a coach that I work for be comfortable with, like, me working on a fadeaway jumper with any of our guys? But you watch the pros, and those guys are, I mean, it's a huge part of it, right? Back to even guards, you know, I would say especially wings are hitting people with that. How do you have teaching points on that? Do you work on it, or do you just let their natural, like, stuff?
Bro, you're killing me. So so we have this might be the favorite series other than our foundation shooting that teaches base, balance, shooting the ball. Other than our foundation shooting, we call them Wades, like Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade had one of the best jump stop, get in the paint. I thought games, jump stop or stride stop to a little fadeaway, to a little shot fake fadeaway, to a rip. So I would watch him and study him, and we just call it the Wade series. This is probably what our pro players love to warm up with the most shooting-wise than anything else we do. there's four different types of fadeaways. It's all the same fadeaway shot, but four different type movements. One, we smack the ball. Another one, we smack and pivot. I was going to grab my phone and show you the text maybe. I think I just texted them all to Lillard 2 days ago. He asked for a workout because he's in LA, and I might have had them all on there. And then we do a rip through over to a fade. And here's why it's so important. One, so going back to the fadeaway, why do coaches allow it or should they teach it? For one, if they're an average player on your team, if they're not first team all conference potential or MVP, like I'm not teaching them a fadeaway. Like if you're shitty, like worry about being good first. Like worry about just making a shot. But the most dynamic players, they need as many weapons in their arsenal as they could have. So the Wade series, and the Wade series is, again, is a way to teach players to shoot a fadeaway. And then also, if you're a really good player that has it, it's a diagnostic test on how to shoot it correctly. So, like, timing of fadeaways are really important. You never want to shoot it on the way down or shoot it too late, right? Like, that's tough. So if you're doing the Wade and you had a smack and pivot and you keep missing short and short, like Jarrett Culver a couple years ago would shoot on the way down and short, it's automatically a diagnostic test of what he's doing wrong with this fadeaway. So it's either going to activate those feelings and help you teach you how to make it, or it's going to be a diagnostic test to tell you what you have to fix. So again, we have the Wade series, Dwayne Wade series. We only do it from four spots on the court, kind of block extended, inside the elbow, the other block extended. And the other thing, we only do it over our right shoulder if we're a right-handed player. We don't even do it the other way because it's just you're not going to shoot that fadeaway too much. And that's our building block to shoot one in the post or to shoot one off of, like Dame will shoot them, like dribble through the nail, get up and push and kick. Well, now he could make them, you know, over that shoulder.
Okay.
Too in depth or no?
No, that was great. That was great. This is the last workout question, so you'll be off the hook after this one. But what the hell do you do with a guy like Damian Lillard, who's like a NBA MVP type player? I'm sure he can do anything you give him. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, he just breezes through everything.
Yeah.
Like, how do you continue to challenge and push a player like that?
Big time question, brother. This is the stuff, you know, I talked to you about the clinics we're doing in Phoenix, like these guys coming out for it. And this is the stuff that like people don't realize until you're in the fire with them. Like what I didn't know when I left Boise State. So going back, like I didn't know how hard it would be to train Dame or how easy it would be some days. The best advice I got though, when I started doing this with really, really good players, and this is the advice like, man, more coaches need, or what we talk about at our clinics. It's not just about all the drills. The number one thing when you train a guy like Dame or someone who's really good, don't F them up. Don't F them up. Don't screw them up. Don't, like, just keep him really, really good, number one. We all are like, man, I got to show Dame how great I am or how smart I am, or, man, maybe I'm working with a LeBron James, something like, they're already good. Don't screw them up. It's not about you. It's not about you showing them how smart you are, creating something like, number one, don't screw them up. However, to continue to get those guys good, here's what I've figured out. One, you can't be afraid to challenge them and hold them accountable. All the great ones want that. Like me and Dane, we still get in fights and arguments. It's unbelievable. I'm 38 years old. He's 30. And like, last summer, we're in Weber. We're talking in the hallway for 40 minutes. Like, while we're out there, he's in the NBA. And I'm like, if you want me to go home, I'll go home. If you're not going to listen to it, like, I don't want you to go home. I want you to put, well, like, I'm like, I get done. We have a great work. I'm like, what are we doing? But he wants that fight. He wants that challenge. Because we're all human. None of us are perfect. We all got to be challenged. We all got to be held accountable. And then here's the separator. If you could look for a way to make a guy, these are the great ones you asked about, not everybody, can you get them 2% better in one area? Maybe it's just making sure he hydrates a whole bunch. Maybe it's just making sure on those fadeaways or those baseline step backs, he always has his chin to the rim. Because for him, he shoots 150 of those during the year. If 50 of them he has his chin down, it's only a 30% chance he's going to make it. If I could get 2%, If I can make sure his chin is up on 50 more of those, it turns into he's going to make it 55% of the time. Like, that's an advantage for him. And he actually, we've talked about that for a while. He goes, Phil, you talked about that 2% stuff. He goes, it actually started making me paranoid in practice. I go, what do you mean? He's like, every drill and training camp, everything, I just be like, where's the 2%? Where's it? He's like, I wasn't even thinking about the plays to run. I was just thinking about every. So if it's a great player, can you give him 2%? Because if you can, that might be the difference between first team All-NBA and second team All-NBA. Because, and I tweeted this the other day, and this is true for coaches. And I know we're going to talk about coaching development too. So true. The greatest competition, the greatest amount of competition is in the masses. Dame only has to compete against like 20 dudes, really. All the great ones. The most there are 1,000 freaking ops, video, GA managers all doing the same crap. They're all great. What are those things you could do to separate yourself and now just fight the elite dudes? All the competition is in the masses. Once you get out of the masses, that like there's less, the competition might be harder, but there's less people you got to compete against.
I love it. No, I really appreciate you breaking down some of that stuff, giving some of the secrets away. So I appreciate you diving into that. Let's wrap up with this, Phil. Give us some advice that you think coaches, you know, need to listen to or you wish you had when you were coaching.
Yeah, good question. I would say this is something I still struggle with, and I need to get better at myself. I don't have all the answers. I don't have it all figured out. I have mentor, like me having mentors has really, really helped me. But my original mentor, Russ Pennell, said, if you want to be a coach, you need to go coach. Like if you want to be a school teacher, what do? You go to the College of Education. If you want to be a doctor, what do? You go to medical school. If you, you know, want to fly an airplane, well, you learn how to become a pilot. There's no place to go to become a coach. There's not like this school of coaching. Like, oh, I got my degree in coaching. Like, no, if you want to coach, go freaking coach. I don't care if it's youth league. I don't care if it's players. And like for me, sometimes I get so distracted or so wound up with the business of it, the plans of it, the details of it. It's like, you know what? Just go coach the freaking guy. Just go coach them. And the person I want to be, I heard this a long time ago. They said this about an old football coach. They're like, man, that dude's so good, he could coach a dead snake. Like, you could coach a dead snake. And here's what's happened. I've tried to hire two Division I guys this week, Adam. Like, true story, two Division I guys in this week. One I took to pro day. One's out on the court. They're failing miserably at coaching. Just getting out there and doing the stuff. They could send an email. They could break down the clip. But they have not been, they can't develop players. They haven't coached. They haven't taught. One guy ran a drill today. Adam, there were four pre-draft guys running into each other. We haven't had guys run into each other. So I would say if you want to be a coach, you got to go coach. And that's why the workshops and the clinics I was telling you about, we're doing these special 15 invites only, all player development. That one filled up in 3 hours. We're going to release more dates this week. But like these 15 coaches, they're going to come out here and they're going to coach. We're going to have chalk talk. We're going to meet. We're going to go through the plan together like they're an assistant coach with me. Then they're sitting around the court or they're going to be on the court helping. Then we're going to go and debrief. Then one of the guest speakers is going to be a player. And like my top assistant, he just got a D1 job. I'm losing him, my top assistant. And I go, man, you've come a long way. He goes, yeah, my second day on the job, Damian Lillard told me I was a shitty passer. So I went home and I practiced throwing. Like these dudes will tell you that you got to be able to coach. So that's why, and we're going to do it in August. We're going to have only 20 spots, only 15 spots where college coaches get to come and develop players with us. Then another one where admin support staff get to come and develop players because there's no school for coaching. There's nothing where they could get out there and coach. And that's something I'm continuing to grow in because we live in this world of social media, technology, distraction. I'm like, Phil, just go coach. Just go coach your guys.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for providing that resource because you're right. It's the only profession where you spend 10 years in the office and then they just throw you on the court and say, figure it out. So where can people find out more info? Is that on Be Better, Be Different?
You know what? No, we're kind of just my Twitter probably until they get some of this. I don't know how to do all this, but at Phil Beckner is my name. There's a flow page with a link to it. They're actually releasing more dates tonight for session two in July. And then in August, we're going to have those other dates where, and that's why we really want to do it for like support staff. Cause the two guys I've brought out, one was a video coordinator, one was a support staff. And like Tim Frazier was ready to kill the guy today. He's like, he's screwing up my score. Like, He's been at the Division I level for 9 years, and he couldn't do the stuff on the – that's tough. So we're going to try to provide some resources for guys to get better at that.
Okay, so check out Phil's Twitter handle, at Phil Beckner, for all the info. The link is in the bio, as they say.
There you go. There you go.
Well, Phil, hey, man, I know I've kept you a little longer, but I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us today and recap some of the stuff that – You dove into in Phoenix and more. So thanks as always, man.
Hey, like I said at the beginning of the call, and I think you could believe this. Like, I just believe in you, and I believe in what you're doing for coaches. Like, we need more of this. I know you're helping. Like, I've even hit you about guys getting jobs, and you've recommended some great people to me. But what you've built and the opportunities you're providing, not only for growth but for jobs, I would do anything to support you and Rising Coaches. I'm excited for what you guys are going to do.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate your time, man.
All right, brother. I'll see you. Take care, Adam.
All right. Take care.